Gary DePaul with Unlabeled Leadership. Welcome to episode 19, Kevin McNulty Listens to Culture. If you want to lead, you'll want to attend to culture. With that in mind, let's get started. If you ask me what Kevin McNulty does, I would say he does social media. Well, more accurately, Kevin's company, NetWeave Social Networking, helps businesses manage their social networking presence. Sometime before he founded NetWeave, Kevin worked with me at another company called Ceridian. In fact, he reported to me. And even though I was his manager, at times, he was my coach. He helped with building our department strategy, but more importantly to me, he coached me on time management and shared techniques for handling and managing my email. If your inbox is huge, then full of emails, then you're not doing it right. Part 1, what's for breakfast? Anyone who believes that a business success is based on sound strategy and executing to that strategy probably doesn't understand what business is about. To run a business, you have to work with people. To work with people, you have to work within a culture. For me, culture is a collection of assumptions, values, customs, beliefs, and the behaviors of people within a group. If you have two people, you have a culture. When you have more people, you have a more complex culture. Cultures can bring out the best in people or the worst in people. So culture is something you just don't ignore. Kevin's well aware of what culture can do to people and to a business. Here's Kevin talking about this.
You know, Gary, when you first asked me about a memorable time with a leader, it actually made me think of something that I encountered when I was working for you at Ceridian. You used to have a whiteboard up in your cube on the wall. Written on that whiteboard, kind of off to the side and circled, was the phrase, "Culture eats strategy for breakfast."
I remember that.
That has always stuck with me. It immediately clicked for me that I had seen that happen time and time again at other companies I had worked for. And I saw it happen there as well. It immediately clicked for me. I had never thought about it in that context before, but that just struck me as, well, that's what's happening. And I've kept that with me ever since. And, you know, the couple places that I worked after that, saw it illustrated again. And so it's something that I've really tried to keep always kind of right at the surface layer of my subconscious as we created NetWeave. And as my partner and I have built the organization, I've always tried to think of what kind of culture are we creating? Because we can have the best plan in the world for getting to our goals, but if our culture doesn't support that, it'll never work. So that's something that has really come in handy in my own leadership and something I've seen illustrated time and time again by others. And it all goes back to that whiteboard.
People in management can strengthen culture or they can damage it. And they also can make it harder for teams to execute or make it easier for them to execute, which contributes to business outcomes. Kevin talks about this.
There's a trend in organizations, especially probably in the last 10 or 20 years, of empowering employees, right? Yeah. Driving down decision-making and empowering employees to help the organization achieve its goals. That's great on paper. But if you have a leader in place who is controlling, used to being the boss, doesn't want to let go of anything, you can say you're going to drive down decision-making and empower employees all you like, but it will never happen. The first time an employee tries to make a decision and the boss overrides them, the employee immediately says, okay, well, this was just another case of lip service and I'll stop trying. It's really important to look at the culture that's being created, not just corporately, depending on the size of the organization. You know, you have microcultures. You know, you have a culture in a department. And if that doesn't fit the culture of the company or is not compatible with the company's goals, that's always going to be the problem child. Unless you're aware of that component, you may never figure out why they're the problem child. It's like, we've just always had a problem with Department X, and I don't, you know, I can't even really figure out why they're always the odd man out. Well, take a look at the culture.
That's so insightful about an organization, that there's not necessarily one culture. There's multiple cultures at the, just like you're saying, for the company wide, there may be a trend, then the business unit, then the department, then the team, you know, and even between two people, you know, you have a, yep, a culture. Trying to attend to all that stuff is challenging for someone, especially who's less experienced, and it doesn't seem an intuitive kind of thing that when you're starting a new role for the first time in management as a supervisor or something, to think in those, in these terms.
Yeah. It also relates to something that I just recently came across. There's a gentleman who used to be the commander of nuclear submarine, and yeah, he now does a lot of, I think his name, gosh, his name,
David Marquet.
There you go. That's him. Yep. Yeah, exactly. So you know him. He yep, does a lot of consulting and lecturing in the business field now. And he talked about, you know, when we talk about driving down decision-making and creating that culture, he created a culture on his submarine of communicating intent. You know, he didn't want anybody to come to him and ask him what to do. He wanted them to tell him their intention. My intention is to surface the ship. My intention is to, you know, fill in the blank. And I thought creating that sort of culture supports that strategy brilliantly, as opposed to fighting it, which so many cultures unfortunately end up doing either wittingly or unwittingly.
Yeah, David Marquet commanded the Santa Fe nuclear submarine, and mm-hmm, you've just captured it, and the book is Turn the Ship Around. One of the things that he actually has said in some of his lectures is, if you're in management, you want to modify the environment so people can be at their best. And I think what you're describing with culture, and it ties in beautifully with that.
Yeah. So that's really the thing that's really stuck with me for a long time. And I can still, funny as it is, I can still picture it on your whiteboard. I can actually close my eyes and see it. It was in blue ink. It's funny that that has just stuck like a mental bookmark for me through the rest of my career.
Part two, what managers should do and not do. If you're a manager of people, your primary role is to accomplish work through others, and how you go about doing that is up to you. You can do this without using leadership, or using some leadership, or using a lot of leadership. Well, that may sound good, but what does that really mean? Kevin shares a story that, well, it'll clue us in. Here's Kevin.
In school, whether it be high school, university, whatever, the professors that stand out to us are the ones that were passionate about teaching their subjects, and the ones who really made us feel not only special, but successful. And I think the same thing applies to leaders. The oldest memory I have of workplace leadership is when I worked my first job out of college, not counting the U.S. Army. So my first job out of the Army was working for General Dynamics in California, Pomona Division. At the time, you know, it was the 80s. General Dynamics was a huge defense contractor. They still are, although, of course, they've changed a lot since then. But I worked in the HR department there. The head of HR development, who was our boss, her name was Bonnie. And Bonnie had a style that would stick with me every place I was ever a manager. And now that, you know, I'm a CEO of my own business, it really sticks with me. And she demonstrated it repeatedly with our crew. So it's not even that I can point to one example, but just a consistency of philosophy that was so important. And that philosophy was, my job is not to do. My job is to help you do. She always viewed herself as, look, I'm here to give you the tools you need and to get obstacles out of your way. That's my whole job. Your job is to go out and execute and be successful. My job is to just make that possible. That was something that, you know, in the military, that's actually kind of the approach they use, but they don't dress it like that. Mm. But to hear that articulated so clearly, that really, I mean, talk about empowering your employees, right? And she demonstrated that consistently. I actually had a manager between her and I, so she was my boss's boss, really. Okay. But that created the culture for our department. So my boss acted that way because her boss acted that way. We try to do that now, my business partner and I with NetWeave. We try to, one, surround yourself with smart, capable people, and two, get out of their way. When we talk to our employees, we say, okay, what could we be doing better? What tools could you use that we haven't been giving you? What obstacles are in the way of your success that we can help move for you?
This approach to management has become a guiding principle. And one of the ones that I've uncovered related to leadership is giving up control. And the other one is called encourage change, but I really should have called it encourage growth, you know, because it's helping others grow as well. And this is something that helps us, enables us to be able to do our jobs and help other people to do their jobs.
You know, if you're in a leadership position, but you're doing the actual work, there's a ceiling to that. It doesn't scale.
Yeah.
You can't, as my dad used to tell me ad nauseum, if you can't be promoted, if you can't be replaced, you can't be promoted. But if you have an ability to create teams that can get it done, that's a skill you can take all the way to the top. I think that that's the most important role of a leader. And I think I used to teach leadership in HR development as well as for a couple of different companies. One of the things that we consistently talked about was the difference between a boss and a leader. Bosses push, leaders pull.
Yeah.
And when you have that culture of success that you're just there to help everybody else be successful, people want to be around you because they want to be successful. They want to feel good, and they do that with your organization. You get people that you can take with you.
That kind of reminds me of the saying, getting things done through others, which is kind of like management. What I'm actually hearing is that you're adding, from a leadership perspective, is getting things done through others, but do it in such a way to be supportive, to help them develop, help them grow, to enable them to expand their capabilities, making the whole team more capable.
Right. I think about a very obvious example of this in leadership is look at the most successful head coaches in the NFL. They lose assistants all the time because they're so good at putting together a team and helping them succeed that their assistants go on to make excellent head coaches. That's a mark of success of a program. If you're losing people in that kind of situation, right? You're not losing them in a negative way, but they're being promoted and advancing. That's great recommendation of your skills as a leader.
In the sports arena, the college football, you are seeing that happening right now.
It's that time of the year, right? So when you look at, you know, the Bill Belichicks and those kind of coaches that have had success for years and years, the Mike Tomlins, you see the string of coordinators. You know, they don't keep a coordinator for more than a couple of years because they put them in a space to succeed. They give them the power to succeed. They give them the knowledge to succeed, and they can take that and go off into the world. And I think if that's why you have turnover, it's a good problem to have. The only turnover you have is people getting promoted and becoming more successful, then I don't think you have a problem recruiting talent behind them.
Part 3, Lasting Impression. After studying and practicing leadership over a period of time, the way you view the people around you changes. how you interact with them, how you think about them, and even how you connect with them. Kevin offers some advice to help us with this way of thinking. Again, here's Kevin.
When I think about advice to give people, as you asked, the first thing that sticks into my mind is something I learned as a teenager. Actually, I was in a program called the Young Marines, and it was an excellent place to learn leadership skills. And one of the very first things we were taught, and it sounds very simplistic, and you may wonder how it applies, but I'll tell you, make sure your men always eat first. Now, of course, you know, this was the 70s. So, you know, we used gender biased pronouns, but make sure your people are taken care of. That taking care of you, your success in the organization or as a leader, that's going to be a natural byproduct of you taking care of your people. Right. So you make sure they eat first. You make sure they have what they need to succeed, that you're encouraging and developing these people, and the success will happen. It's similar to, there's a sales philosophy of take care of the customers and the numbers will take care of themselves. Well, guess what? Your staff are your customers. You take care of them and everything else will follow from that. So I think it's really, you know, going back to everything that we talked about, not only empowering employees, but creating a culture where they can thrive and succeed and helping them to grow and advance. If you're worrying about them, you don't have to worry about things so much. They'll take care of the things. You take care of the people. So that would be my philosophy. My little bit of advice is, being a leader is so not about you. It's about them. And if you can take that approach, I think you'll be successful.
I don't think I could have said that any better. I mean, that really does get at the quintessential part, what leadership really is about. It's not about you. It's about other people.
Right. These days, I've heard it. I hear people talk about servant leader. I think that's just a catchphrase for something that we've always known as good leadership.
My thanks to Kevin for being on the show. And thank you, Kevin, for your military service. If you have any questions or comments that you want to leave with a voicemail, go to unlabeledleadership.com and click the message icon. You can leave a 1-minute message there, and maybe I'll play it on the air. Thank you for supporting the show, and thank you for listening. Until we meet again, lead on.